Okay, this is a little bit rhetorical, a little bit not. But if this economy is so darn good, why do people feel so darn bad? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rosendahl. It is Friday today. This one is the 14th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, this was one of those weeks where there was more economic news that might meet the eye. So we are going to get right to it. The 5 days going by and what the what. Anna Swanson is at the New York Times. Brian Chung is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
So, Brian, let me start with you, and I guess we'll start with the most recent news first. Retail sales out this morning, down 1.9% in December. But I want to posit here that that's not really all that big a blow to the consumer economy, right? It's not a big deal.
It's not that big of a blow, and I think that's because maybe some of that retail sales number just got pulled forward to November compared to what we usually expect to see in December, which is the holiday spending. And a lot of that is because everyone got scared into pulling forward the timing of their Christmas shopping, me included. I'm the person that's usually shopping December 23rd or 24th, but even I was doing it in the middle part of November, like a lot of other Americans were, simply because of all of those supply chain issues, which is a big reason maybe why we saw that negative 1.9% print. But what was interesting was the street didn't expect that, even though a lot of people knew that pull forward was going to happen. So still a little bit of a downside surprise.
I'm a December 23rd, 24th guy, too. And let me tell you, it bit me right in the tuchus this year. I'll tell you what, because the plague comes to your house and everything goes off the rails. Anna, let me ask you this, though, right? We talked about, Brian did just a little bit, supply chain concerns. You obviously report on that extensively. And the name of the game is that it's supply chain that is driving inflation, which is why people feel so bad about this economy. Talk more about that.
A lot of the inflationary pressures, some of the inflationary pressures that we've been seeing are definitely due to supply chain constraints. I mean, we saw in December, for example, a 37% increase in the cost of used cars. A lot of durable goods that people are buying, the price has just gone up and up because supplies are really short, and that is hitting people in the pocketbook. There are also factors leading to inflation, like increasing rents and increasing fuel, but definitely supply chain has a lot to do with it. And, you know, I think it also just kind of freaks people out when they have empty store shelves and, you know, difficulty getting their goods in time for Christmas. And that's really weighing on consumer confidence as well as inflationists.
Yeah, we've got a story coming up from Mitchell Hartman in a minute about consumer sentiment and sort of the divide in this economy. But Anna, look, let me ask you this. Jay Powell could raise interest rates tomorrow, and that's not going to make more semiconductors appear, and that's not going to lower prices, right? So, yes, the Fed's going to raise interest rates, and yes, they're going to taper, but the inflationary pressures, if they're going to ease, it's going to have to come from the supply chain, yes?
I think that the supply chain is kind of one component of it, but definitely a really important one, and one that we're seeing that, you know, American policymakers just don't necessarily have a lot of influence over. The Fed certainly, but also the Biden administration has been trying to rectify some of the supply chain issues by convening major retailers and logistics companies, encouraging the Port of LA and elsewhere to kind of work through the backlog. And you are seeing some of that. You are seeing the ports kind of working through the backlog. And yet, you know, you still have issues in kind of 17 other points along the global supply chain, right? So it's a very complex, intricate system. And just because you fix, you know, one part of it with government intervention, it doesn't mean that things are going to move smoothly. And so you do have a pretty intractable problem with supply chains now.
Brian Chung, what solace do you take in the fact that the monthly rate of increase, right, the headline numbers both on the consumer price index and the producer price index were eye-popping, right, 7 and 9.7%, I think. The monthly increases, though, are slowing. How big a deal is that?
Well, and I think this kind of brings up the differentiation between the rate of increase and the levels themselves. So what we want to see within the context of this current recovery would be a slower pace. But for what it's worth, we should not expect the levels to reverse or to start going down. No, we shouldn't expect to see negative inflation. So when we talk about price, pressures being transitory, again, that kind of sin mm-hmm. word, which we mm-hmm. all promise not to use anymore, that doesn't mean that indeed going to be transitory, that prices will all of a sudden start going down. So people shouldn't be expecting to go to stores, 6 months from now and seeing, oh, wow, the prices actually went back down again. It's just we're hoping for that to go at a slower pace. And as you mentioned, the month over month measurements of inflation right. might be going a little bit slower. But again, that's not to say we should expect to see prices go down anytime soon.
I will say I made no such promise to Jay Powell that I would not say in transitory. I'm just saying, just for the record. But look, let me actually turn real quick to the Fed here on the way out, Anna. Last night, for a reason that I haven't quite figured out, they did it sort of late in the afternoon into the evening. The Fed announced the president's three new nominees for the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. It's two women, two black economists, three people total. And I guess my question is, it's not about changing the Fed's policy stance, right? That's not what these three are going to do. It actually goes beyond monetary policy and increasing the diversity on the Board of Governors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Biden administration has promised to make the Fed look more like the public, yeah. and this would be the most diverse board in history at an institution that has struggled for a long time with diversity. And, you know, it's not just who these people are, it's what their interests are. You know, Lisa Cook's work focuses on racial disparities, for example, labor markets. So, you know, these appointments do matter. It's such a challenging moment for the Fed, how to balance an economy with inflation, where, you know, employment is falling, but so many people have exited the labor force. It's a really interesting question. So, yeah, this is a, you know, very diverse board, and conceivably that will affect the Fed's decision making as
right,
well.
Right. Brian, super quick, I don't want to get into the politics of this, but do they confirm, do you think, these three, or is there going to be some kind of tussle about this on the Hill?
Well, we did see a little bit of apprehension from the ranking Republican yeah. on the Senate Banking Committee, which they'll have to face. Yeah. Pat Toomey, he expressed some worries about maybe Sarah Bloom Raskin for the Fed Vice Chair of Supervision role paying too much mind to climate change with regards to the Fed's efforts to police, bank exposure to possible transition and physical climate risks. But for what it's worth, he didn't say outright that he was going to oppose them. So it seems like for right now, they should be expected to get a full confirmation. But of course, we'll have to see how those confirmation hearings go whenever they end up happening.
Brian Chung at Yahoo Finance and Anna Swanson at The New York Times. Thanks, you two.
See you.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, you know, a little bit up, a little bit down, kind of the same. Details, numbers, you know the drill. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the month of 3.9%. It was the year of 7%. Apologies for butchering or maybe misappropriating Mr. Dickens there, but the sentiment, it seems to me, is apt. We learned this morning from the good people at the University of Michigan who do regular surveys on this that consumer sentiment in this economy is basically as bad as it's been in a decade. And as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains, those two numbers, the rates of unemployment and inflation, well, they've got a whole lot to do with how people are feeling right now.
The sharp rise in prices we've seen recently, people do not like it, says Mallory Newell at public opinion firm Ipsos. It's not like the typical consumer goes out to the store with a copy of the Wall Street Journal and a calculator.
They may not be thinking about 7% inflation, but what they are thinking about is, oh yeah, my grocery bill's gone up. Gas prices are higher. I see that.
And when inflation is this high, outpacing wage gains, low and middle income consumers really suffer, says economist Robert Frick at Navy Federal Credit Union.
If you make less than $100,000, inflation is very painful for you. On the other hand, people who make above $100,000 are becoming more optimistic about the economy. Inflation is taking a bigger bite out of lower income Americans.
And that includes older consumers on a fixed income, says Kayla Brune at polling firm Morning Consult.
They tend to be either retired or closer to retirement. They have fewer working years ahead of them. and not as good of a position to kind of weather a rising cost of living.
Whereas younger workers have decades of work and earnings still ahead of them.
They're expecting their wages will keep up with inflation and still potentially be in a fine financial situation.
And right now, many Americans do feel like their financial situation is fine, says Mallory Newell at Ipsos, especially those who have a job or just got a better job with a raise.
Their outlook when it comes to job security and employment is certainly more positive than we've seen in the past.
She says there's a big disconnect between consumers' personal optimism and national pessimism.
They feel more positive about their own situation. But at the same time, the views of the bigger economy continue to be pretty grim.
And the fact that the country is going through yet another COVID surge isn't helping with that grim feeling. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This comes a little late to get paid back for all those rapid tests you might have bought to get together with the family over the holidays, but starting tomorrow, health insurers are going to be required to reimburse you for up to 8 at-home COVID test kits every month. If, that is, you can get your hands on them because they have been in short supply. So the Biden administration is also rolling out a program where you can get tests mailed directly to you. That starts next Wednesday. In the meanwhile, though, necessity being the mother of invention, people have been getting tests wherever they can. Veronica Kuhn is a hairdresser that we've been following. She's in Henderson, Nevada. And back at the beginning of this thing, she started a bartering group to help people find what was then scarce. Toilet paper and masks, hand sanitizer. Now?
In my barter group right now, we have a lot of people looking for testing for home COVID tests. Because we're short everywhere, they're opening up sites as best as they can, but it's been a nightmare for the last couple of weeks trying to find a test. I've had a few people message me and say, hey, if you know anybody really in need, I have some extra tests, but they're not really wanting to put it out there on the barter group because they're just so few and far between. We got sick. My husband woke up not feeling well on the first, and I mean, CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, Smith's, Albertsons, everywhere had said that they sold out that morning. We ended up getting one from a friend of ours. And then my son and I woke up on Sunday with it. And my other son and my daughter woke up on Monday with it. And we all had similar symptoms. We all knew it was going to be the same thing. Knowing that my husband was going to have a test to go back to work, we went to the doctor last week, Saturday, and he tested, and sure enough, that one came back positive, too. He works on commercial doors, but they don't have sick days, so, like, he's not getting paid except for his paid time off that he's accumulated, and he went through that last week. This is day 13 for us. So being out of work that long without getting paid is a struggle for us financially because we're like, you know, most other Americans living paycheck to paycheck. And my daughter's out of school and on distance learning. My other son had to take an automatic 2 weeks off of his work and he still was waiting approval to see if he's going to get paid for that. And with my job, like I can't go to work and work on people as a hairdresser. The other thing that's hard is like when you have COVID, you can't go anywhere. So you have to rely on like grocery delivery and it's expensive. It's easy to say to be prepared and we usually have a pretty good food storage, but the inflation and everything has really hurt us. I've lost a lot of clients in the last year. I know I'm not the only one going through this. I know I'm not the only family struggling. I'm glad we didn't have to go to the hospital. I mean, there's a lot of silver lining blessings to see. You know what I'm saying? It's hard when it hits you. It makes you a little bit more compassionate towards other people that are in the same boat or worse off.
Veronica Kuhn, she is in Henderson, Nevada, recovering from this virus. Coming up.
That is really just sort of the icing on the cake.
Which is nice till somebody takes the icing away. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 201 points today, about a half percent, 35,911. The NASDAQ gained 86 points, 0.6% there, 14,893. The S&P 500 basically flat, 46.62. For the week, the Dow gave back 0.9%. Both the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 dipped about 0.3%. The Boston Beer Company tumbled 0.8% today. The brewer of Sam Adams, among others, well, they cut their annual earnings outlook yesterday, saying that was partly due to rising costs and, oh, look, supply chain problems. Holiday weekend's here, so let's check in on gas prices, shall we? AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular gas nationwide at $3.30. That compares with $2.36 a year ago. Bond prices down. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note thus up 1.79%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We haven't done much on corporate earnings of late, so we will do it now, and we'll do it in the forum of the biggest banks in this country. JPMorgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo reported this morning, and they're doing good, as banks tend to. The thing we want to concentrate on, though, is lending, which at said banks was mostly up last quarter. It's worth a note here, though, that borrowing, business borrowing in particular, hasn't really been all that strong lately, in part because of the uncertain COVID times in which we are stuck, but also because a lot of businesses seem to have borrowed what they needed through the government's big relief programs. But as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, that might be changing.
The ongoing supply chain challenges have made it harder for the baking supply company TMB Baking to import the equipment it sells. So CEO Greg Warwick says the company's trying to bulk up on inventory, and that means it needs to borrow some money.
We're working with Chase right now to secure a line of credit that will allow us to do that.
Warwick says that would also help the company cover the cost of the new employees it's trying to hire. And it would give the company more flexibility if, say, a piece of equipment ends up costing more than expected, or if a customer doesn't pay on time.
That money allows us through ebbs and flows of business to be able to manage through some of those tight spots.
Commercial lending still has not caught up to where it was before the pandemic, says bank analyst Gerard Cassidy at RBC Capital Markets. But last quarter, he says many businesses started feeling a little more certain about the economy and more comfortable taking out loans.
They're using them to rebuild inventories for capital expenditures. So we believe that commercial loan growth is going to be very strong in 2022 as the economy continues to expand.
Other businesses are borrowing because they're expanding.
We're planning to open up our third restaurant.
That's Steve Chu, chef and co-owner of Ekiben, a restaurant in Baltimore. He says sales have done well over the past year, and he wants to get bigger. But he's not sure where things are headed in the economy. Financing his expansion, he says, will let him preserve all the cash he's earned, just in case things go south.
With like COVID and like all the inflation and all that stuff and everything changing all the time, we just think it's like a wiser decision to just hold on to our cash.
Especially, he says, when borrowing is still really cheap. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Something is not going to happen tomorrow that's going to have some pretty far-reaching effects in this economy. For the past 6 months, more than 35 million households have been getting a payment from the federal government. The 15th of the month is when it shows up. Payment's been as much as $300 per child. It's the expanded child tax credit from President Biden's American Rescue Plan of last spring. And tomorrow, January 15th, is the first time since July that those payments are not going to happen. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports now on what we know so far about the effects of those monthly payments on the families that have been getting them.
Before the child tax credit started arriving every month, Jessica Morrison sometimes needed to put groceries on credit.
Also, unexpected expenses like a car repair
or a plumbing issue.
Morrison is a caseworker for the state of Pennsylvania. Her husband drives for Uber and Lyft, and they have two little kids.
There have definitely been months on end where we were living paycheck to paycheck just because of a string of bad luck. We're like, it would take forever for us to get back on our feet.
But the $550 a month from the child tax credit changed that. She says they were able to build up a little cushion. And for the first time, they felt they could spare $65 a month to send their 7-year-old daughter to dance classes.
It's extracurricular. She is able to get exercise and she's met new friends. And that's something that is really just sort of the icing on the cake.
It's not a necessity, but Morrison says seeing all that her daughter's getting out of dance has been transformative. The tax credit has also let Nora Moshtayel, a single mother in Atlanta, do things for her son that she wouldn't otherwise. He's 13 and has Down syndrome, and
he's always loved going out to like coffee shops and eating out.
But other needs take up a good chunk of her paycheck.
Because he does have special needs, he gets speech therapy and occupational therapy, and these are extra expenses that we've had since he was born.
But the $250 a month means Moshtayel can budget for the occasional restaurant meal and field trips for her son, who she's homeschooling right now. There's early evidence that most families have been spending their child tax credit payments, much like Moshtayel and Morrison, on food, household needs, and enrichment for their kids. Mark Stabile is a professor of economics at the Global Business School, INSEAD, and he says that lines up with research about how parents in other countries use monthly child benefits.
They spend more money on education. They spend more money on food at home. They spend more money on transportation. They end up spending less money on alcohol and tobacco.
There are many countries that give monthly cash payments to parents. Germany, the UK, Ireland, Sweden, the Netherlands.
The United States has really been an outlier in terms of not providing this form of regular support for children.
Megan Curran is with the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at Columbia University.
It's a very common feature of how governments recognize the cost of raising children and also recognize that it benefits society as a whole to help parents raise children in a healthy and well-supported way.
Curran and other experts say the best place to look for a sense of how an expanded child tax credit might work here long-term is Canada. Hillary Hoynes at the University of California, Berkeley, says both the amount and structure of Canada's child benefit are similar to the 2021 child tax credit here. And aside from its healthcare system, Canada's social safety net is more like the one in the U.S.
Many other rich countries that have child benefits also have other sorts of family-based benefits, such as lower-cost childcare, also family leave, and other kinds of benefits.
Even without those, studies show Canada's poverty rate dropped 20% in 2 years after it expanded its child benefit in 2016. And the payments have contributed to what Hoynes calls a remarkably broad improvement in family outcomes.
Kids are more likely to attend school. Parents are more likely to report that their children are in better health. Parents are more likely to report that the family is able to meet their food needs.
Other programs in the U.S. that provide financial support to parents, like the Earned Income Tax Credit and SNAP or food assistance, have had similar effects, Hoynes says. And she adds there's a broad set of findings showing that government spending on families with children yields significant long-lasting returns relative to what it costs. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, it turns out that Netflix and chill is going to be getting a bit more expensive. No, not that part. The part where you got to pay for the streaming service. The company announced today that prices are going up again. Standard plan is going up $1.50 to $15.49 a month. Premium's going up $2 to $19.99. In related news, Netflix spent something like $17 billion on content last year. Wall Street loved this, of course. Shares up about 1.5% today. Check the chart. Nice little bump just as this news broke. All right, we're going, but here is your moment of economic context in which the supply chain And thus inflation, as we were talking about earlier, just ain't getting any better. The logistics company Flexport has a stat it uses. It's called the Ocean Timeliness Indicator. It's basically door-to-door, exporter in Asia to importer here, how long something takes to get where it's going. Last week, the OTI up 3 days to a record 113 days from over there to over here. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you on Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.